You know, it's crazy, like, you know, Tin Can Phone, it started in prison, you know, and when we came home, they kept, like, our first interviews and all of our first content in bondage. We had to start over, you know what I'm saying? We lost Armand and we lost Joe, but we gained Blue. Tin Can Phone.
Did that time and I bounced back. Had us in the beanies, now snapbacks. Boys in blue trying to snap back. Trying to make sure that my guys never go back. Ain't worried about the instas in the Snapchats. I'm worried about the homies on drugs, close to relapses. Messed up when you know the dealer and the buyer. Look him in his eyes, I can tell if he lying. Been locked up with gorillas and the lines. Yeah, respect to get you far and don't move around blind. Forget about the chow hall, ain't waiting in line. Bust down on the bed, spread with the homies. Not no more, we on the streets waiting for him. Free such and such, free with you out. We all on K-Boo talking it out. Me, Mike, and Blue and a couple of guests. Popping knowledge like Petro, who got the gas? Doing the work, trying to heal for my past. Politicking on the yard, trying to touch me a bag. Mike was on the yard with the hitters and the sav. Orange beanie on his head with the thing in the bag. Blue photo shoot fresh, sharp enough to cut a wrist. First day of school, cooling ain't with the cuddling. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Mike, Blue, Queens.
Banging this motherfucker, Tin Can Phone, season 2, wrap up. It's the whole gang in this motherfucker. It's your boy, Misfit Adi. I'm in here with my boy, Michael Stevenson Bernard Jr., the artist. What's happening, brother? What's happening?
That's me. And I feel good in ways. Like, maybe just your hype makes it feel good more than I actually feel.
Yeah.
I do feel good in ways, but I'm also exhausted, but yeah, currently, for those watching the video, in my Reed Studio office, which I'll get into in a little bit. One of the reasons I'm exhausted is because I moved everything I own yesterday, so I'll get into more of that too. But Blue, how are you doing? You look like you're in your office.
Man, I am. I'm in my office. I've been here too much. Yeah, I can feel it.
As our one of our founders, Mon, would say, we pray for these problems.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's hard work, but yeah, that's working for yourself. Sometimes it means working a lot for not very much money, but you know, it's good work and I enjoy it. And you know, life is good. The shoes on my feet didn't come out of a catalog, so.
Come on.
Like,
come on.
I get to talk to some of the guys on the inside sometimes and just, you know, cut that stuff up a little bit and hear where they're at. But trying to get things done on the inside is even so many obstacles to people there trying to start businesses or get something going. So life is good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually really interesting. You use the term working for yourself. And that was an episode, I think, on season one, if it wasn't maybe early in season two, which we'll dig into when I get all my DJ equipment in order.
We had your boy from the inside, the artist. That was the episode we did working for yourself. Kirk, I think his name was. Yeah. That was that episode.
That was episode 3, season 2, episode 3.
Come on.
That released in August 2022. So, you know, we part of today in our recap, we are talking about and thinking about reflecting on the season 2. But that was a mad long time ago, almost a year ago, that, you know, we had that conversation. And I don't know, were you having your own business in August of 2022?
Yeah, I did. I had my own business. We've been around for a year and a half now. So we've been chugging along.
Different?
I did have my own artist sort of business, you know, where you're kind of like doing your own thing and you create an LLC, but it's sort of, you know.
Sure. Well, I guess.
Third line between the person and the business and that type of thing.
Well, I'll say I'm not getting at it generally. I know that you're an entrepreneur. I guess more specifically, I'm saying, I feel like I know that the magnitude and depth and gravity and even your felt experience is different than it was August 2022. So in the ways that you can, why don't you close the gap and share that story? Because even before you and Queez were talking about business, so, but the listeners don't know and Queez hasn't heard.
About starting my own business, Michael?
Not just generally, again, like your very specific experience, how you doing, how you feeling, is it too much, is it a little bit? I mean, part of even on the show, you're like, I didn't get my shoes out of a catalog, but I spent a lot of time in my office. But is it bigger or smaller than yourself?
Yeah, Go ahead, Queez.
No, I got you. So first and foremost, where did you get your business education from in the sense of when you was getting ready to start your business. Did you have help? Was it more of a studying situation and then you just jumping in? Where did the education to get the business started come from? Because I know a lot of guys who, oh, I'd heard this and heard, it'd be a lot of different advice you get. But then when you get into that thing, you find out none of those people was right. So like, where did the business education come from?
Man, yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it's like there's things that travel with us from like our old life, like pre-incarceration. And
yeah,
I had some of those foundational things and education, but in so many ways, I feel like I like reprogrammed my mind and took a totally different direction when I went on the inside. Like I went from working in like services and being a manager to just being an artist. Like I wasn't trying to do a lot of business stuff. I just wanted to make art and do positive things and kind of like express myself. And I wasn't sure exactly what direction that was going to come in. So I kind of like stopped thinking like a business person. And then somebody asked me if I would run their business as a manager. And it was sort of a one person show at that point. So I had to do everything. But I got a lot of the, I don't know, the systems that I'm using now and the connections and the understanding and also just like people, you know, from that job, from working as a contractor and then being able to use something that was really analogous to what I was going to use in my own business. So kind of like using those same systems and those same approaches and what I was going to do for myself with my business partner. I think, yeah, it's wild. And each experience that we have sometimes gives us that little building block to prepare us for the next thing. And I definitely feel like that is the case for me. Definitely helped.
I mean, that's great. I mean, and the you. So thinking again, season two, it's been like a year as we've been working on this project, but also like you, that's an additional year in your life and your business. But I mean, you've been related to this show the several years, like pre-seasons of Tin Can Phone. So when we were talking about working for yourself in the beginning of season two, part of that was like really hearkening back to this period where you were incarcerated and you couldn't and all this stuff. Yeah. And so, yeah, like as our listeners get to know us or our lives, you know, how's that really going for you as an existential human today?
I really want to say a couple things to that. One is like, there were barriers, right? There's people that don't want to hire you when you come out. There's people who do, right? And somebody took a chance on me, which I guess they thought was a pretty good chance and which has, you know, worked out. Like I'm actually downsizing my hours where I'm the contractor, but just because I have so much to do at my own business. So I've gotten to a point where I need to focus more on the thing that I'm building over here. But yeah, you know, I think it made it so I don't have to have a boss, you know, except my business partner. And I get to sort of make my own hours. There's a lot of autonomy. I think those are important things for guys who come out and are trying to find their way. I think it's important for us to be able to, you know, make choices and move in the directions that we want to do. I think a year ago, I was working all the time and my brain was overtaxed and it was just too much. And I think that that's sort of the story of a small business, you know, in its first year. And luckily now we still work a lot, but it's not the same. We're able to kind of cut out some times that we're able to, you know, take a break and enjoy life a little bit. So for me, it's been really positive. And if it weren't for things like stresses of the system and trying to navigate those other things that the post-carceral life gives us as gifts, then probably life would be even better. So
yeah. And I mean, I think that's a really great segue. So as Puis mentioned earlier, maybe pre-show, that a lot of this episode or some exciting things about non-unanimous jury came up. And maybe we'll do that first. So for folks who've been following along, one of our more recent episodes in the end of this season was with a guest named Takuma, who was also navigating life with non-unanimous jury conviction. And on the show, we've been chronicling from even season two, where Blue was a feature and was actually a feature as we were recording, but we launched it, I think, early or first or something. So is a pivotal part of the identity of this project. And so as folks may know from listening, that there was some legislation that got this unconstitutional law not only abolished in the nation, but the individual states are starting to come through with their packages. And I think when we recorded the show, it was like, yes, it's happening, but what's happening? I don't know. So maybe Blue, you know a little bit more about that. Breaking news, this stuff is airing. This is our most contemporary episode we've ever recorded, guys.
Yeah, I mean, we're writing for this, we had no idea what the outcome was gonna be. We've been advocating and trying to get the word out about different issues that affect, you know, people who've been incarcerated or who are still incarcerated. And we had the Ramos decision and we had the Watkins decision from the Oregon Supreme Court at the end of 2022. And yeah, it was like, these cases are all vacated. And people are like, if you've done all your time, there's no chance they're going to retry you. Well, it's not really clear. It took months and months for the new precedents, the new Supreme Court ruling to actually affect anything. You had people just sitting inside, just waiting, probably going a little crazy, you know, hearing that their case was unconstitutional, but still, you know, sitting behind bars. So for me, I've just continued to move forward. My case was vacated, but they reinstate the ability to try you again. And even though it seemed like it was a pretty easy sort of determination, nothing's clear at this point. So just kind of like waiting on it and still waiting. And I think that's part of what prison is all about. You know, prison is about waiting. Like if you don't learn how to be patient, if you don't learn how to stand in a sally port and just be there while they go take you through one door to an empty room and then through another door to an empty room, then you're going to go crazy. And some people do. And sometimes we just go crazy for a little while and then we come back. But yeah, so I'm still in the waiting game. I think what's been interesting also is to see how that's affected other people. I got to go down to Berkeley and watch the film about the non-unanimous jury issue and the Watkins decision and how it affected Takuma and his family. And then of course, how that would affect, you know, other people in the same situation. So it was really cool to be down there for the film school graduation and get to see that with Buddy being the director.
Yeah, which I'm glad you brought that up. When I have news, I'm like, my brain is threadbare. But yes, you bring up a really interesting point. So that episode with Takuma on the show, which I guess for posterity's sake, parts 1 and 2, episodes 8 and 9 for season 2, that episode was recorded, which I believe we referred to explicitly while we were recording. So we recorded the episode at the KBOO recording studio, and then Buddy and his collaborator, they were at the recording content that then became part of Buddy and Linus's culminating short doc. And so I believe this month, the LA Times picked up the short doc. And so we'll be available for the world and the internet to see. So I'm sure you can plug into the various Tin Can Phone platforms, plug to Buddy and Queez, hype that up when it hits the airwaves. And it's really exciting, actually, the project. Even though our recordings have been intermittent over the years, some really exciting things are happening with this project. So Easter egg or teaser for checking out season 3.
Yeah. Hey, Michael, it just came to me the thought of like, it's like, what happens if we let these guys off parole? Like, what are they going to do? And it's like, Queez and I are like, well, we're going to do the exact same thing we've been doing.
Sure.
Like, except I went down to Berkeley and watched a film school film being released and I didn't have to ask anybody. Right.
Sure.
Like what happens after, you know, 10 years of clear conduct in prison or whatever, an sure. entire set in prison. And then
you can speak from your personal experience.
And then 5 years on parole with zero violations of any kind. Well, what should we do with this guy? Should we let him go to a film school thing or should we retry him? You know, like
Blue, it's justice. It's justice. The trial was obviously no good. And yeah. So we got to retry it because we didn't figure it out. We punished yeah. you. And we got to start over. Obviously, this is the American legal system. Come on, we can't just be letting not dangerous characters out into the streets having a good time, which I think maybe this puts a cap on your update. I'm also aware that you had a interstate trip of pure leisure with maybe some strange characters in tow.
Oh, yeah. I had a couple of interests. I've gone out of state a couple of times recently, and it was really great. Got to go down to Santa Fe.
So these are the first times you've left the state in how many years?
Well, I went to Seattle one time. But yeah, I mean
take that out. It's ruining the bell curve.
We'll say 17 years.
Rewind it. Do it again. Just say 17 years.
17 yep. years. So I just went down. A friend of mine invited me to go on this kayaking trip, right? And it was going to be like 16 people. And I was pretty sure it was all men. And we went down there. And this guy's a phenomenal dude and a great artist. But what he didn't tell me was that his dad used to be a police officer. Mm. And so he invited not only my friend's brother-in-law, but a bunch of their friends. So out of the 16 people on this raft, on this kayak trip, 5 of them were police officers. Yeah. So I'm like in literally the middle of nowhere, 1,000-foot cliffs on either side of me, barren, you know, beautiful, beautiful land. And I'm in this situation that's totally like alien from anything I would have ever imagined. You know, this is not like exactly the demographic that I normally kick it with. So
did you think more about that than actually being on the trip? That kind of bugged you, right? It kind of threw you like, damn. But look, this is what I think though, to be around people like that who really don't know your background, you get to see how they would treat the average you without the tag. You feel what I'm saying? But then ultimately, you know, like if y'all only knew. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of, I like it. I like it for you, Blue, to be able to experience that. I like it for you.
Yeah, it's really interesting the way I think about it when I try to put myself in that situation, because I don't have a similar context to you all in that particular way, which, well, that's I guess a story for another time. But recently I had an interaction with the cops, which was like peculiar, but I'm not in the carceral context or policing, but just when I'm in a place where people have like privilege that feels astronomical and I'm like near it, and I think my feeling is complicated, but there's some resentment, like the casual ease they experience in life is like, what the heck? Like, I'm about to go get in my car with like a sticky clutch and go where I go, you know? Yeah. And so, and I can get more into that with my current situation in a little bit, but you know, so it's this interesting juxtaposition where like, even when it's super, like, cause it would be chill. People are often chill. Like the way things get polarized is like, oh, we have a disagreement on this political idea, and this is the protest where we're both yelling at each other's faces, and then later like, let's go have a beer and sit down and watch some television, you know. So anyway, Blue, I'm so glad that you're getting the rest that you can, and to keep moving on along and to get back into the catalog of season 2 episodes. As I look through season 2 episode 1 was catch up. So we're now closing the loop. And season 2 episode 2 was, had some hilarity. Does anyone know which one it was?
Season 2 episode 2. So we did the catch up. What was episode 2?
It was a quiz feature.
A quiz feature.
Quiz was featured in a Michael Blue project.
Oh yeah. Not just one man.
More than one man.
Boom, 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 boom.
But the history behind that is getting a phone call from Queez. So like, what the f*** going on? It's like, wait a minute. And so before, in pre-show, you know, you were saying, hey, I'm hanging with moms, all this stuff. So in More Than One Man, you were the guy who depicted in 3 ways. You were in your prison blues. You had a work jacket. And then you had a shot of you holding your daughter. Where are you now? Household manager? Parent, palliative care.
I'm not gonna lie. Like, even from then, like, I had a lot of ups, but I've also had a lot of downs. But in those downs, it was such a learning experience. I've been having to defeat myself a lot because I just go what I know best. They playing with me. I had to lose that, like, the system playing with me. They don't lose no matter what. I could run forever and get away. It doesn't bother them. Or I could get caught and go to jail. It don't bother them. I could commit a crime. Like, they're not playing with me. You just got to apply by certain rules when you put yourself in a certain situation. But even on top of that, just going through life, like, I think I made decisions that I felt has been best for me, but it comes with pain though. You feel what I'm saying? Like, in a sense, as everybody know, because they see me on here with my son after he was born and shit. You know, I've never been presented like with my daughter though. You know what I'm saying? And she's older. She's 5 now. You feel what I'm saying? So the thing with me is I always try to do what's best for them. And in certain situations with parenting, we could put our heart before sense. Like certain things don't make sense. You feel what I'm saying? So for me, it was just more like separating, getting out of that situation before I get back to who I was doing hateful shit. You feel me? Resentment and shit like that. So that's where I say defeating myself. Cause prior I would have stayed in a relationship and just been toxic and doing all the crazy shit, you feel me? But when you got kids, you got to know that they watching. And I just understand like how you treat the other parent. That's how your kid going to look at to be treated by whoever they dealing with. You feel what I'm saying? So knowing that my kids is sensitive because they not raised how I was raised. You feel me? I've always done my best to make sure. And I mean, I guess even just being there, as sadly as that is, just being there is already more than, you feel me? Like, so just even going through that, like you said, you feel me? I moved moms out here. So moms is staying with me now in my spot. And that's challenging. You feel me? I have to defeat myself there because I see a lot of my old ways, like a lot of the things I had to heal from and correct, I see it in her so much. And I like, we be bumping heads because I don't really move off of emotion. You know what I'm saying? Everything has to make sense. It has to be logic. Like it has to make sense for me. And so mom's just, you know, she just got certain ways. And it's like, when I be talking to her, I be seeing her and she'd be like, damn, she just makes me feel like the old man. I be ready to snap on her. Mm-hmm. You feel me? Cause she be talking shit. So moms be on one. So just navigating that, going through the feelings of like, I've been gone for a long time, you feel me? Like I haven't been consistently with my mom since I was like 14, just going to juvie, going to jail, coming to Oregon, going to prison, 10 years, coming home, being here because I got kids. Like I haven't really been with my mom since I was like 14. So it's always been long distance and it's easy, just like a jail relationship. You on the phone, you can say whatever for however long, hang up and go back to your regular life. But when you out and you have to be present and with these people and build it, but it's just like, you know, I felt like, damn, like I see why I stayed away from you. You feel what I'm saying? Not just her, but just certain situations. You feel me? Like she reminds me everything that I wanted to grow out of for myself. She's a constant reminder of that. It steady be just triggering me, but then I just be having to stay logical. Like, all right, like it'd be little shit. Like, mom, I'm finna go to the store. Like, I'm gonna go. You feel me? You want something? And like, she wanted to go with me to the store. You feel me? But like, her feet be hurting and shit. She old and shit. Her feet hurt. I'm like, I'm finna go to like 4-5. Like, this is a run. Like, I'm finna be outside. Like, you feel me? I'm finna be outside, mama. You gonna be on your feet. But not saying that to like, not want her to come with me.
Sure.
Just saying that like, if you do come, yeah, we finna be outside for a minute. Oh no, it's okay. I don't want to go. You can just move. I'm like, my life, I don't, because I think at that point she wanted me to, like, she thought I didn't want her to go, but I'm just letting her know, like, it ain't no one store real quick and we coming back home, like, we outside, so, but, like, just the attitude, oh, you can go, I don't need nothing, da, 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 and, like, I'm just like, mama, calm down, you feel me, like, communicate, talk, but she come from Sac, though, you feel me, like, she fresh here from Sacramento, so, you know, in Sacramento, it's a hard ball lane, like, you know, like, when she get here, I'm paying for everything, like whatever she need, whatever, you feel what I'm saying? Like you here, stack your, like, we gonna figure it out. I got you though. But like, she just always wanted to pay for shit. She always wanted like, pay me back. How much was it? I'm gonna pay you back. I'm like, why would you pay me back for a soda? Or like, why would you pay me back for anything? Like I didn't do it for to get paid back type shit. But the mindset, she can't let nobody have one over her. You feel me? I don't owe you nothing. You would never say, you feel what I'm saying? Like just, so in these is the ways that I was. And when I was in prison, it's like, nobody ain't never gave me nothing. Everything I had, it was on me. And now I see where it's just the black, you feel me, the cycle. But also, you know, I'm with my baby girl more, like my daughter, you feel me? And you know, all my relationships is like, I kind of look at them like business relationships. Because when you emotional and you looking at it, boyfriend, girlfriend, or like when you look at it like that, bro, it's a lot of rules and unwanted, like, you know, little things that come with this shit, man. I be looking at that shit business, like make that shit make sense. So also trauma almost won, You feel me? Chama almost won. We f***ing around. We got the merchandise. I really been working hard on the book. That shit's tearing me. The book is tearing me because it's autobiography-ish, and I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want to. I'd rather share the knowledge that I gained through life. I'd rather share that in a way to where it could be universal more than me writing about me.
You should write about you and then work with an editor to turn it into a fiction story. And also, I remember maybe it was season one when I was with all you young knuckleheads and I was like, man, can I get y'all to read some books? It was not you, Blue. You were not, neither are you a young knucklehead. You weren't on the show. It was with the young knuckleheads, you know? And I was like, man, I got to get you guys some books. And there's a text by Mitchell S. Jackson. And it's told, I don't think it's considered autobiographical. He has another book that you probably also would love called Survival Math. And it chronicles like all the men in his lineage. But the book, his first book, which I'll remember it, it's about growing up on the streets of Portland. And one of the reasons it's interesting to me is because I'm working in this neighborhood and like there's a scene where he's describing like, oh, we're driving on this and we're going this way. And it's the same streets I'm on. And he's in like the first scene is either him or his mom getting out of rehab and they're like close connected and all this stuff's going on. It's a really great book. So I'll definitely get you a copy, but yeah. It's written like a story more than it's like just a monologue about your life. And I think that, working with someone who I may not even know someone who could get the project started will help you do that. So that sounds really exciting. Maybe I'll put that on our docket for season three.
Well, stuff. Definitely put that on the docket.
I got a comment.
Hit it.
For Queez, but I know that I kind of try to push Queez into a different release earlier that doesn't include like a huge narrative, but maybe like 1 to 2 page little Queez gems, you know, little gems of wisdom, and then that's it, right? It's a self-contained thing that somebody could read in one
day. I've got that. I got like 20 of them joints.
Yeah, because that'd be a nice little book.
There's some compound stuff here even. So what Blue's talking about is there's the short story style exists. And I've been reading more, and even like 12 book series, actually parts of the whole series are based on short stories that were what the authors were working on before they built this larger thing. Some of that stuff could be released earlier. And I think that's part of what Blue's saying is like, it could be hitting the audiences now.
Oh, instead of waiting for the overall project.
Yeah. And so I want to bring up, so we had some special drops and maybe they're not even on our typical release radar yet because they were specifically these shorts that were recorded for Juneteenth. That was just last month. And Queez got on with a show guest. I think maybe they were season one guest, BG.
Yeah, our very first guest.
It was kind of the end of season one where we caught up with BG. And so that was really great stuff you guys were talking about, which I'll have a funny question later. But you had some poetry on there. And I was like, damn, like you doing all this stuff. You know, you're sitting on a gold mine. So yeah, hopefully
Blue, look what it's written on.
You'll be able to
this the writing you're talking about. It's written on the tissue roll.
I love that.
I wrote it in prison.
We gotta frame it. Don't lose that stuff.
I got you.
I love like those little books that like have, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, just shares a thing about like happiness or joy or relationships or whatever. I think you would do such a beautiful job with that, like when you were also talking with your homie about what it's like to date a thug.
Yeah. Moment.
Brilliant stuff. And I also think when you were bringing up, and I know we're kind of doing a recap, but you were bringing up, you know, facts matter, right? And in relationship, like I wonder if it's partly like because of our experience that we want the facts to line up, you know, like if somebody's like about feelings, like this is how I feel, but they're saying stuff that's not factual, like that throws a monkey wrench in the gears for me really quick.
Yeah, you're right. But see, it's tactic behind this, and sometimes it don't be consciously done. It could just be through the subconscious, right? When people say, depending on situation, but when they say I feel and they shoot shots, you can't say they're wrong because you can't say somebody's feelings are wrong. So they use it in the manner of I feel a thing, but then shoot a shot. You can't say they're wrong. So that's one thing that I had realized is like certain, you use certain words in places to where, you know, and the reason facts matter is we could go back and forth all day with opinion and feelings. Nobody's going to still be right because nobody's speaking facts. Like if you say I did a thing, say I did a thing. Don't say I think or because you walk this way. You don't do all that. None of that shit is factual. All that shit is you putting yeast on it to make it. Don't do that. So especially with personally the females in my life, I come from blowing up and the toxic. Are you? You feel me? I'm him. I'm a toxic person. So
we got an editor.
Yeah, when it comes to going back and forth, I'm with all that shit. But what that causes is now you blow up, you aggressive, Audie, I'm scared to talk, I can't do this, I can't. So everything you do, bro, you gotta just, when you speak in facts, I always say this, and this is to the youth, man. I wanna talk to the youth real quick. Look, be a bottle of water. Be a bottle of water, you know what I'm saying? You shake the water bottle, water stays the same. You crack it, it ain't gonna overflow, no matter what. Throw it against the wall, throw it in the air, kick it, whatever you want. Shake that bottle of soda, you shake a bottle of soda and you pop that top, it's everywhere, it's a mess. And that's exactly what it's gonna be, a mess. So I found myself hella mad, back and forth, doing the yelling and storm outs and packing up and not packing up with no factual shit. 2 days later, everybody's okay. You did all, see, Black people, we die of high blood pressure. And high blood pressure sometimes be the cause of strokes, seizures, all these different things, you feel me? So understanding that I'm at risk, like I eat a lot of chicken grease and I already saw, you feel me? Like I already got things working against me. You feel what I'm saying? I can't stress myself out to go back and forth when neither one of us speaking facts when I could stay calm, literally state the facts. And I don't have to argue. There is no going back and forth. Well, but Queen, they hate that because they want you to be aggressive.
Yeah. I just wanted you to think about this just because this is our show so we can do whatever we want. But
yeah, sure.
Think about just like for today, what if like facts don't even matter in relationship?
How do they not?
What if they don't matter at all? Because the only thing that matters and that the only thing that somebody's really saying when they do say anything is that there's something behind that, right? There's a feeling behind it. And that feeling is what we want to take care of in our relationship. So all the facts, they don't even matter. That's what I keep having to.
But that's why you're going to keep going through the same situation.
Well, there's a lot.
Because they know they're going to be able to get away with it.
But you know that the this is something I read, but that the fights that couples have, and we're not going to go too deep into this, but the fights that
couples have. I have a couple. Season 3 of the couples episodes coming.
Listen to this, though. The fight that couples have, they have their whole lives. That most of the fights that couples have, they're going to be perpetual throughout their entire time together. It's weird. Nobody's.
I don't agree.
Well, it's what the guy.
We'll save it for the couples episode because things you're talking about are interesting and make sense. And the thing that I even want to draw out is
you got one
last shot. Hit it.
Do it, please. Do it.
Are you two having this fight? Or season 3, we're just going to be hearing all this? I'm kidding. Let's go.
It's habits. You allow somebody to do something so much, they know they could do it. It's going to be, so yes, you will have that fight for the rest of your relationship because you never nipped it in the bud in the beginning. Because if there's something wrong, instead of shooting shots and all the weird shit, speak, talk.
One of the reasons
I would just say that. One
of the reasons I work with young people is because I'm tired of talking to adults about politics. I don't try to convince adults of nothing else.
Of nothing.
You two included, because you two are locked in a deadlock right now.
Hey. I ain't trying to convince them.
What I want to say is that part of what's being brought up is really fascinating. So I'll get to the stuff with Queez and your mom, how it came up, but where the conversation has gotten. I mean, I've had conversations with both of you, either between us or about other people, that the competency and the level of approach to how you are navigating and negotiating complex relationships has evolved. And so something that Blue said that was really interesting is like, oh, hey, do you think that's because of prison? And I was thinking about it as you two are going back and forth. And I was like, well, it is actually quite interesting that in this system of oppression, when you're negotiating with other people who are oppressed like you are, like facts and logic are this sort of common ground. And you're like, emotions don't matter. But my relationship existentially with the human experience, I think that's all emotional. And everyone's bringing their complicated mom shit into prison and smearing it all over each other. And so getting back to mom, which ironically, super epic podcast power that I have, episode 4, 5, 6, and 7. Episode 4 was with my childhood friend. And then episode 5 and 6 were at
Holy Beans,
talking about housing. And then the following episode 7 was still looking for a house. Shout out to Holy Beans and Shalimar, who was a formerly incarcerated business owner. And unfortunately, my understanding is that business is closed. At least it's not in the location it was in before, which it, that business was a Black-owned business that was returning to the Albina district. I should, specifically on Alberta, I should try to look her up and see where she's at and see where we can't maybe overlap, but less about that. But, and I guess another thing, checking with Shalimar, I'm making a season 3 situation list.
We going crazy on season 3. I ain't going
to lie. It is about to get crazy. I hope. I'm glad that you're saying that because, man, people got to pull some weight. But
it's about to get crazy.
So looking for a house. So one of the reasons my brain is threadbare is I just moved yesterday. So that's where I'm at. But it is interesting because, let's see, November 2022 was when we were talking about in October looking for a house. So I guess it aired in October. We maybe did it before. So we've all been looking for housing and I made my first move. I know some of y'all have moved one or more times since then. But I made my first move into, so I mentioned earlier that I'm in my Reed studio. I've been working at Reed College this past year and I got offered a position for next year. And so I decided to take advantage of their college housing. So I moved into like a carpeted place with air and heat and washing and drying and, you know, I don't even know, a shower that's clean and because I've been sending pictures of my dog sitting outside of the bathroom while I was sitting on the toilet. And I sent a picture to one of my old roommates. And I was like, no longer am I pooping in a closet. Because my bathroom before was like a toilet and like a little closet, like a slide door. And for months and years, you could like peek through the slats. While, you know, and so I haven't even really enjoyed. I got like one evening shower and one morning bowel movement. I haven't eaten in the house. We still got to like clean everything and everything's in boxes, but it's exciting that happened, though even more fascinatingly, as everything, I guess, comes full circle, I had a vague opportunity to someone who's actually supported the work I've done in prison from the beginning in different ways, subtly. They had asked me to move things out of their house because they were moving. And I said, I'm looking for a place. Can I move in? And that's a complicated story, but our conversation with like folks with, you know, privilege, I was feeling without privilege and that this was a major opportunity for me just to get out of where I was at, to get a 3-bedroom with my homies, you know, in a house that I've lived in and familiarity and comfort. And the part of it that overlaps with Shalimar and Albina and Alberta is it is in that community. And so it would have been a Black person returning to a community that was historically gentrified, actively, all this stuff. And I had my hopes up and, you know, I don't actually fully know what happened, but I think it was one conversation that was a little too real that the kind of offer got taken off the table. And that was like majorly destabilizing for like me emotionally or like resource wise. And actually that relationship feels at this time like unbuckled. And so, you know, that conversation earlier about how inside they have these certain skills, all of these things, and they have trauma and then they're trying to navigate stuff and it goes crazy. And so even me in whatever way that I am also still navigating this. And so that's like when I'm sitting with people who aren't needing to navigate this shit, like wait for a favor and for something to come through so you sleep good, you know, is I exist in the forms of precarity that I exist. But all of this both is a check-in for my time period, but it's super hilarious. So as we were starting to boot the show back up for I don't even know why, different stuff coming in and the book's almost coming, blah, blah, blah. But I went back, I had stopped listening to the show, you know, because I at this point have listened to every episode post-recording. So I was up to date somewhere into season 2. And I, maybe it was the Shalimar episodes that I started. So these right where we're recapping. And there's a hilarious special feature from my mom, which again, thanks producer buddy who used it, kept it. It's even featured special guest, Michael's mom.
I don't think I heard that one.
You don't heard that one?
I didn't hear you.
It was at Holy Beans when checked out. And me and Blue were in the space. You were online with my mom. And you two were just talking about stuff. And so it made the air.
I remember talking to moms. I just didn't remember the episode. I remember.
It's on the episode. See, you're not listening to the show. You got to catch up with the episodes. See what we're all about. Come on. But the reason all this is beautifully full circle is before I moved to Oregon, I moved back in with my mom. Resources and all this stuff. I was working. I mean, I had a good life, but I was living in a rural area. I was working several jobs to like stay in the position that I was in. All those jobs were keyed into some of the work that I'm interested in still, but it was just too much. And I wasn't able to be this me, the one that, you know, has an office and is producing the show and all of these different things, because those projects take a lot of capacity and I was spending all my capacity just working to survive. And so, I mean, the story is more complicated related to art and stuff, but as it relates to the show, that's enough of the story. And so I moved back in with my parents, and that was a really interesting time for me because all the stuff you're talking about, I think most humans have it. I was talking to a collaborator of mine from Singapore, and they have like a really multi-generational, like in the same household culture. And so then like the grandma's kind of raising the kids, and she was saying that this presents this peculiar moment, which you've talked about on the show, Queez, where like the grandma is parenting the kid in a certain way. And it's the first time that the adult who's the child of the grandparent can enter into a dialogue around this practice or behavior that's not ideal or doesn't feel comfortable, or they at least don't want it for their kids. And some of the stuff you brought up with your mom is really interesting because the kind of like snap to this way that they were. And even now they're in a new place only for 4 months. I was thinking about while you were telling the story and how this analogy even came in. So the water analogy was great, by the way, the soda water, we got to bring that back. But the snake skin analogy, and your parents teach you everything you can to survive in the jungle. But as you move through to the different phases, you got to shed these layers of skin. And so I want to then also just encourage you. I mean, it sounds like you're doing well. But I felt like that period of living with my mom was an opportunity to be like very healing for the relationship, which like included a brief stint of therapy that didn't last long because of finances and other stuff. And it's still true that for me, distance is probably the healthier thing. But I do think that's something that's really interesting about the experience you're having is you've been able to carve out enough prosperity in which to like share and support your parents. And I think as you know, we were just catching up with the Tin Can Phone, the larger Tin Can Phone team, including We Rise Media and Tammy, formerly of KBU, and Buddy the producer, and one of our founders, Mon. And, you know, we were checking in on one of the kind of historical characters of the show, and they're still where they were at before prison. You know what I mean? And so really kind of skyrocketing into a new stratosphere is rarefied. I mean, the fact that I've been talking about the show a little bit more, now we got this epic catalog, be like, oh, you do stuff in prison? I'll shoot them the YouTube. I'm like, they could see it, it's real. Yeah. And people are really impressed. And I think the reason it is an amazing creative product, but as I was sitting here recapping about season 2 and all our lives for the past year and all this stuff, part of the thing that's amazing is the guys on the show who are having the life that's worthy of even paying attention to, or can articulate it, or can write that story, or have your own business, or do that thing that remains elusive. And then, you know, for certain reasons, including trauma starting in the household, you know, and never being able to recover from that, and coming into prison and making it worse for themselves just because there's not another way that they know how to survive in a stressful environment. So, just wanted to bring it all full circle.
I'm glad I had that chance to pop in with mom. So what you were going to say, Blue?
I wonder if sometimes people want to hear more about like what it's like on the inside, you know, like, I know that's part of what we do, but we also talk about a lot of stuff about like reintegration, coming home. And when Michael was talking about his toilet, I was just thinking about the toilets in prison, you know, it's like you sit on a porcelain no seat like what people are used to, you know, like the plastic seat that comes down or the wooden seat that comes down, that doesn't exist. And then there's no stall doors, at least when I was there. You're just sitting there right next to another person. Maybe there's five toilets right next to each other. And then there's mirrors in front and people at the mirror brushing their teeth, you know, 10 feet away. It's like a trip, right? Like, that's not cool at all. I think they might have had to change it because of the PREA Act.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. PREA, or I guess PREA doesn't come up a lot, though it's, I'm aware of it. But bathroom access has certainly been a thing. And even, you know, Kurt Charlton, who was the guest on the show about working for yourself, has an artwork about the way that bathrooms are constructed, how many steps it took to get to the bathroom. You know, when you, and we were, Blue and I are actually working on a an affordable housing unit. They want to get an installation of art in their lobby. And so we kind of brought them the Gallery Blue package, not in specific, but just the ethos of pertaining to the people who use the space. What are they called? SROs, single room occupancy. Sure. And those are the kinds of things that folks are able to get access to when they first get out. Blue, for those who don't know what a SRO is, you want to hit them?
Yeah, so these are just a room. There's usually a sink and a mirror in it. And then the bathroom is a shared bathroom on the floor. And that's how a lot of the housing is for people coming out downtown, that's provided for people.
Oh, Sub City.
Yeah.
I lived in Sub City housing when I got out on the shop. Yeah, I ain't gonna lie though, like, I get asked a lot about prison in the streets and people who know me, but I really don't be talking about prison because of the way that I did my time. You feel what I'm saying? Like, it will always sound like I'm promoting or gloating about like violence or, you feel me? But like, even though the path of growth and really diving into that did come, but it came at the end of 10 years, you feel what I'm saying? Like the last two, again, you know, every time I speak, I'm gonna say rest in peace to my brother Ben, because like I said, he the one that, man, you the misfit, like I'm on the yard. So that's why I don't really, and I always stutter when I talk about prison, because I try to present it in a way that's not like gloating, you feel me? Because when the youth hear it and they like, oh, like I could be a gangster or a thug or a dude, like, you see what I'm saying? Like, that should have just sparked the idea. Like, and I hate the fact of the way that, like I said, my entry into prison was like, I already was prepared for this. I went to foster care when I was five. You feel what I'm saying? Took from court gunpoint. So like, I went to foster care when I was five, me and my brothers and sisters. Like, you always speak about Michael school to prison pipeline. You feel me? I rode that whole train. Like, I never remembered nothing, but I remember going into every next grade because they already knew. And as soon as I got 18, 17, it was already over with. You feel what I'm saying? School to prison, like, it was just, so and that's why I always say I'm a child of the system, you know what I'm saying? Like, I really, 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 really grew up in the system, from foster care, juvenile hall, boys camps, boys ranch, group homes, county jail, prison. The only thing I ain't did is go to the feds, and that was all before I was 30, you feel what I'm saying? Like, that was all before I was 30. Like, I got out when I was, what, 29? So, like, you feel what I'm saying? It just, but I did my time a different way. But it's crazy because I was just holding conversations last night about my heart. And I start thinking about all the relationships. The relationships I have now are, every person that I deal with right now in my life is from the pen. It may be 10 years ago. It may be, you know, five. But, like, all my relationships in Oregon is from prison. I didn't know anybody on the streets. I was only here for 2 weeks and then I was gone. But I didn't know anybody on the streets, and I got love out here. I love the town love me. Like, but they all those relationships is from prison. Now in California, that's the home front. So like those relationships are more personal. Like, but I mean, I guess they both personal. But anyways, I just say that, like, I don't really like, I guess you could talk about what it's like on the inside as far as the institution go, but as far as the way of doing the time, I hate talking about it because I was thugging. And I don't ever want to promote for nobody to want to go in there and be on no thugs or think they gangster, because that's how you get poked up and that's how you have a bad time. You feel what I'm saying? Like, so it just be hard for me to relay how to do the time or how to not get, because I don't think I was institutionalized. I don't think I've ever been institutionalized. Like, I feel like even out here on the streets, I don't live like mentally, it's always prison rules in effect, because that's when I was at my sharpest. And I understand that's when I was at my best. And that's when, you know, I could recognize what was going on. So that's why I go back and listen to old 10 Karen Phone. That's why I go back and listen to Great American Story. Shout out my boy Armand. Because when I hear myself talk from then, it snapped me into a place. And it's been a couple times, me and you were seeing where I was at with it, and you just hit me the podcast, boom. It just be different little things that's like, you just got to remember. You feel what I'm saying? But like, as far as doing time, like, I was thugging, I ain't going to lie. And I don't never be wanting to promote that shit. So I just, yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting on a lot of different levels, but I think that's maybe really a great contextualization for the show. And even season one was... You know, that's why I was like, can we get y'all to read some books? You know, it was more of just a snapshot recap, like, and close to the experience, you know, like fresh out kind of stuff, like almost even healing from the trauma of the very recent experience. But, you know, well, I guess we could talk about it more in season three, but, you know, Queez has got his own business now, talking about trauma almost one. But that conversation is really important. It's really exciting when Queez is talking about it, because I can understand it from a certain vantage point, but a lot of the analogies or the relationships or the ways that the thing sits, it's from experience. And so the fact that you are able to, and is not surprising to me, not that you were able to, but that Ben was involved, and that the power that Ben had was so, captivating, yeah, to really cultivate the drive and desire in another person, that then, you know, Ben's light kind of extinguished before his time.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff is what we're working with. Like, and the Great American Stories, which will soon be launched, maybe by the time season three comes out. Actually, that's probably true. But we are working on it with ReRise Media, and it's likely that we'll get it properly published. But these stories that were the initial kernels of Tin Can Phone's legacy. And so the things that Queez is talking about, these kind of pivotal words that everyone was kind of sharing. And actually all the folks who were really close to this project got out and stayed out and has had a bumpy roads, but that's-
A lot of them died.
Yeah, well, sure. But not just the interviewees. Like I'm talking about the family. The season one host, all of, you know, Joe, and Armand.
Okay,
you know,
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Really made it out in a way. Even made it so far out that, like Blue was saying, you know, it can't even be this close. But I do think that what we're now doing in season two is quite revolutionary in society. So finishing out our recap where we started. So right after the housing stuff, we went into Tacoma and non-unanimous jury. Hey, and then we've-
Mike, yes, let me just say one thing you say. You said about Ben's influence, it's because, like, I knew how to be a gangster. Like, I've been used my whole life by people to be a gangster. Ben turned me on to college. He took me off the yard and was like, I know you could do this thing. Like, I know, because he seems, I guess, something in me. But he turned me to writing. And, you know, so that's just the influence of when somebody try to lead you in the right direction. He never asked me to fight nobody. He never asked me to protect. It was never that. All he said was like, I know you're smart, bro. Like, go to this class. Go to this class. Like, it was always about healing and learning. It wasn't never about no, you feel me? And that's why it hit so much. And that's why everybody loved Ben, and you were always hearing his name.
Well, I think that there's interesting layers of that, because in my relationship to Ben, he really had some extreme wisdom that came from inside. What was 25 in? And so... It's kind of fascinating to me that someone in that situation would even go through the trouble of trying to break through to someone who just did 8 years of a certain kind of way of being inside. And to like see that potential and want to nurture it out. So that's really special about Ben, but it's also interesting about what it takes and what can be effective. And so, and it's interesting, you know, we're attributing it to Ben, but you're attributing specifically, we're touching on a lot of different things, but one is like
season three, man. Y'all gonna have to tune in to get this, man.
Yeah, you know, Ben and his way, but then education more generally. And so another project that Tin Can Phone X Gallery Blue has got coming up is a show in 2024. I gotta learn that we've been brought into a show about spatial justice, and it's covering a bunch of topics during the 2020 uprising in specifically Portland, where Portland police for however many days resisted folks who were peacefully protesting and used tear gas, which there's an organization in season three, and I'm really recapping this, I don't remember the name of it, but their goal was to ban the use of tear gas all over, but especially domestically. And so we've been invited to this show, and or I was invited as an artist, and what, and they said like, oh, juvenile justice, like you want to go talk to some kids? And I was like, oh, what I want to do is work with the team I already work with. What I want to do is bring the stories forward that I already know exist of men who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s who were policed 20 and 30 years ago as children, young people, and contributed to how that life went and where it is now. And those are the folks who survived and are articulate enough to tell the story. But this exhibition will essentially feature and focus the prison to school or the school to prison pipeline, which I guess I mixed that up, but I am interested in, with this show, creating a prison to school pipeline that kind of re-engineers back the knowledge that came from this place and bringing it in to make it. So all of that will be going on in season three. And there was some other nugget that I wanted to drop.
Y'all better tune in season three.
One of the artists from Gallery Blue reached out to me, and I don't know what they said because I was, while we were doing pre-show, I was starting to activate my Getting Out account so I could communicate with them. But we are a hub. Something is happening. Final thoughts before we liquefy?
Final thoughts, Blue?
Man, it's just, it is interesting to think of all the changes. You know, I think all three of us have moved. I'm in a new place. I didn't have to ask anybody to move. I just did it. I know Queez doesn't ask anyways. You know, neither does Michael. So we just like roll up.
I had to ask. I had to be like, can I move to your campus? And they're like, all
right. Right.
That's a big move though.
Yeah, it's fast. The changes in.
I'm an 8 or less minute walk from this studio.
And, you know, Queez is an extraordinary guy. I love to hear you talk and love to hear you speak on this. So I'm interested in what you have to say. Season three, there's a lot of people on the inside. There's a lot of people who have extraordinary abilities and skills and don't know how to find their way out. Yeah. They're caught in a trap and they don't have that person like Ben who's connected with them yet to help them to start on another path, you know?
Hey, they got to find it. They got to find it within themselves. That's one thing I will say, though. You got to find it within yourself. You know, I could have been resistant to the things that Ben was trying to point out to me, but I already was on my journey and understanding that I was much more than what I agreed to be when I was a kid and growing up. So him pointing me in that direction at that, it was perfect timing. Cause you know, sometimes you could be resistant when somebody tell you you're wrong or a friend, you know, you could be resistant to that and then you could break a relationship. Cause now as a friend, I can't even feel like I could even really talk to you like that. So, you know, for sure, shouts out Ben, that's my boy. And I told him I'm gonna keep this going. Trauma almost won. I never try to present it as a business and I just do the work. And then when people ask, it's like, okay, this is what I got going on, shirts. You know, we got shirts and everything going on, all the different colors, you can Instagram, all that. But I'd rather just do the work because it's not about the service of clothing, you feel what I'm saying? Every day, just doing the work. Every day, like, you got to live it. My boy Urban Hines once said, hashtag, why not me? Being that, why don't I become the change that I want for my community, for my people? I can't say I want it and then be doing some whole other shit. So that's what I'm saying. Season three, don't be mad at me, bruh. I'm telling, listen, we know what's been going on these last, you feel me? Especially this last year. Don't be mad, but we keeping it real. This tin can phone, we tell the truth, man. Voices from the inside out, and I'm the misfit. I might end every show like that. I like to have that too.
It's good.
They depend on me to tell the truth.
It's true.
They depend on me to, because look, it's some homies, I would say some associates who lightweight close to the show, who, you know, we all kind of, you feel what I'm saying? But it's been some reach outs and it's been conversations and it's just been some crazy things going on. And I try to protect people that I f- with, so I don't really be speaking on, you feel what I'm saying? But as we talk about prison, healing from prison, coming from prison, relationships, and as we talk about all these different things, then I'm forced to tell the truth. Because we want to know we all got the honeymoon side of it when you first come home, it's sweet, great, all this shit, but then it kind of, you disappear. No, there's some people, you know, even for me, you feel me? There's some people who got some to say that they, you feel what I'm saying? They might not like how I move, you feel me? They might not like the album, but it's just all about truth, though. It's just, man, tune in to season 3, 10 Can Phone. Thank y'all for rocking with us, man. It's the Misfit, man. Whole gang in this.
Until next time. Well, actually, yeah.
You are listening to the 10 Can Phone Podcast, where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the sources. We tell the stories from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on cable community radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple, and anywhere you love to catch your podcast. And make sure to give us a follow over at 10canphonepodcast.com. And follow our Instagram at 10canphonepodcast. This Misfit Adi signing off. Hey.